We're holding on Memtes Amud Aleph, beginning the new perek, sixth perek of the Masechta. So now the subject of this perek and the main subject of this and next perek is going to be when a person makes a neder that he's not going to have a certain kind of thing, a certain kind of food or a certain kind of thing is going to be off limits to him, what exactly is and isn't included. We already had in the third perek, we had things like definitional things like that. When a person says, I'm not going to have hana from people who have a mila, from people who are descended from Avraham, from Shchore Harosh, people who the black hair on their head is visible, and so forth. And we defined over there at the end of the third parak what's included in each one of those. Now we're continuing with that and defining as far as various foods and various objects. When you say that I'm not going to have enough from this kind of food, what exactly is and isn't included? So the Mishnah says, "Hanudim in amavushal." A person makes a neder not to have enough from, or not to eat, whatever food that is cooked. So what is included in cooked for this purpose? Mutar. Now one thing we have to keep in mind, which we're going to discuss in the Gemara, is we generally say by nedarim we go according to loshen b'nei adam, we go according to whatever the common way is that people speak in that particular time and place. So here the definition that the Mishnah is going to be giving us are mostly, if not all, we're going to see the first one in the Gemara over here we're going to discuss, but in general we're going to be saying that they depend on what common usage is. So in common usage, do people use the word mevushal to mean anything that was changed by fire, or do they use it to mean only things that were changed by fire in a certain way, what we call cooking? So the Mishnah says mutar b'tzali, so he would be allowed to eat food that's roasted, that's not included in the category of cooked. Over shaluk, he would also be mutar to eat something that is shaluk. Most of the mafoshim over here understand, and this is generally what it means throughout Shas, that shaluk means overcooked. So not just cooked, but boiled or stewed or whatever. So the Rosh mentions over here that it means that it's overcooked like that. So another way, Tosfos actually, the way Tosfos writes is actually can be understood in one of two ways. The Ran says it is true that shaluk does often mean that, but over here it would have to mean, says the Ran, something that's not fully cooked. Because again, loshen b'nei adam, you have to consider in loshen b'nei adam, something that was cooked, something that was overcooked, would still be considered cooked. So therefore, how could you say that if it's regularly cooked, then it's also, but then if it's overcooked, it should be mutter. That's also included in the category of mevushal in common terminology. So therefore, the Ran says that in that case, it would in fact be also, and the sholok of our Mishnah, which is mutter, would be where it's not fully cooked. But again, the Rosh and Tosfos and everybody else say that no, also the Mefarish say that no, it means that it is in fact overcooked. Anyway, so you'd be mutter in those because those are not in the category of mevushal. The Tosfos Rid actually has another interesting explanation. He says it's only called mevushal when it's cooked with spices, but shaluk would be where it's cooked by itself without any other spices or ingredients. Okay, what about omer koinam tavshil she'eini toyim? What if the person says a koinam that I won't taste any tavshil? So it's a tavshil, it's the same shortage as boshel, but it means tavshil means, in other words, some kind of cooked dish. So we have to define again what is included in the category of tavshil. Also, what we're gonna end up saying is that a tavshil is anything that is eaten with bread. So also b'maisik deira rach. So such a person will be also in maisik deira when it is soft and liquidy. Maisik deira, the Ran defines, you can take grain and grind it to make flour, and then you have various things that you make with flour, but you can instead have where you don't actually grind the grain, you crack it in such a way that each grain is divided into two or three or four pieces. So you get something like, So they could use it as a snack, but that would be something else. If they toast it in the oven, then they would use it for a snack. This that we're saying this chilka, taugus, and tisni, as the Gemara calls them, which are respectively divided into two, three, and four parts, they would use them sort of like farfel or like bulgur wheat. You can go into the store and you can buy like that quack wheat, bulgur wheat, and then like they use it in salads and whatever. So what they would sometimes do then is they would take that and they would cook it in a pot to make a kind of porridge. So the Gemara calls that kind of porridge daisa. So now you can have, it can be made liquidy. So then when you do, then you would eat it together with bread. You might even dip the bread in it, or at any rate, it's too liquidy to make it to be a meal by itself. So you would eat it together with bread. So therefore that would be called tavshil. Or mutter ba'ovah, on the other hand, the person will be mutter to eat the same maisik data if it was made thick without that. It's not liquidy. It's a thick porridge, because then you don't eat it together with bread. So again, the idea being that what is considered tavshil is something that you eat together with bread. In fact, the Ran brings from the the difference is when we said hanoda mina mevushel, if he said I won't eat mevushel, then we said he's mutter to eat roasted or sholok, however we define sholok. Where sholok, again, most of Shas, means overcooked, but the Ran says over here it means undercooked. However, when he says tavshil, then that's different. When he says I won't eat tavshil, then the definition of tavshil is anything that is eaten together with bread. So therefore, in fact, the Gemara is going to explain that when he says that he won't eat tavshil, then he's taka also to eat roasted meat or sholok or roasted anything or sholok anything, because those are also eaten together with bread. Conversely, on the other hand, the Ran brings from the Yerushalmi that the flip side is if he did say the word mevushel, he would in fact whether he uses the word mevushel or tavshil, he will be mutter to eat maisik data, which is thick, because if we define tavshil, we're saying is defined as something you eat with bread. Mevushel is what people usually call just something that is cooked. So a thick porridge, a thick thing made out of this cracked wheat like that, is people don't consider it mevushel. It is, in fact, of course, cooked in a pot, but it's not necessarily, people don't call it mevushel. And vanidorim, you go according to Loshen Leon. So whether he says mevushel or tavshil, if you have, for example, let's say hot cereal, which is thick and not liquidy, then he would be mutter to eat it. On the other hand, if he says that he won't eat tavshil, then the rule would be anything that is eaten together with bread. So it would be liquidy farina, or porridge would be osir. Anything cooked or roasted or whatever would also be also, because those things are eaten together with bread. The definition of tavshil is it's eaten together with bread. And the Mishnah continues, muta bebeitza trumuta. Now, on the other hand, the person who makes a neder not to eat tavshil, he will be mutter to eat a beitza trumita. The Gemara is later on, and Nunamid Beis, we'll learn it tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, is going to define that it means an egg that was cooked over and over again until it becomes very small in size, and they use it for medicinal purposes. They use it for a person is sick, then they give him that for nourishment, because it's easier to swallow. Because since it's small, it's easier to say, it's almost like swallowing a pill, kind of.
Put my microwave for a long time.
I guess in effect nowadays it would be the equivalent of microwaving it for a long time. The Gemara is going to say they cook it over and over again, whatever. Anyway, the point is you don't eat it together with bread. So therefore he would be mutter to that, because again, tavshil was defined as something that's eaten with bread. Over dalas haramutza, the person will also be mutter to eat dalas haramutza. Dalas is a gourd or a pumpkin, something from that family. Remutza, we're going to define in the Gemara in a couple of blot. We're going to have two different opinions in the Gemara what dalas or remutza is exactly. One we're going to have is it's a pumpkin that comes from a certain place, and the other one it's a kind where they bury it in hot ashes in order to cook it. So we'll see in the Gemara Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, we'll mention that point. But anyway, the point is, again, this dalas haramutza, however you define it, is not eaten together with bread. So again, it's not considered tavshil. Next, continues the Mishnah, Hanodim in Maisik Deira. What if the person makes the neder that he won't eat Maisik Deira? So Maisik Deira, specifically, we said, includes these various kinds of cracked wheat, which you use to make porridge or farina or whatever. So then, Ein Oser Elohim Maisik Resachta. So then, the only thing he's also in is things that are boiled in the kind of maisik deira that are boiled in the pot. Meaning, in other words, that the Ran brings from the Yerushalmi. Maisa resachta would include more than these kinds of cereals. It would also include, for example, rice. It would also include, for example, when you take flour and you boil it in a pot to make various kinds of things, such as lokshin, such as noodles or whatever. So maisa resachta it's called that because you have to cook it for a long time. A couple of the other mafroshim explain that maisi resachta would also mean that the Rosh says, for example, that it's completed in the pot, meaning sometimes you have things where after you cook them, you still need something else to do in order to finish them. You not only cook them, but you also bake them, let's say, or you not only cook them, but you do something else to them afterwards. You fry them afterwards, let's say. Here we're saying, Maisa resachta would be something which all you need to do is cook it in a pot, and then that's it; it's ready to eat. Let's say, for example, noodles. So that would be included in maisa deira. What if, on the other hand, he says that I won't taste anything that goes into a pot? Also, then he will be also to eat anything that is cooked in a pot, even if that cooking is only part of the process. So even if afterwards it needs some other preparation, and even though it's not just maisik deira, it's not just these cereals or rice or whatever, other kinds of things that are cooked in a pot would be included in hayyoda deira, that they go down into a pot. Right. Okay. So now the Gemara starts off Tanya Rab Yoshiyomer. We learn in a braisa that in the beginning of the Mishnah, we said that if a person says that he's not going to eat mevushal, then he's allowed to eat roasted food because roasted is not in the category of mevushal. However, the Gemara says Tanya Rab Yoshia Oyser. Rab Yoshia says that it's also in that case to eat roasted food, and he says v'afapishen raya lebrother, even though there's not a solid proof that roasted is included in the term mevushal, zeicha ledover, we have a remembrance of it, shenemah vayivashtu ha-pesach ba'ish kamishpat, because the Pasuk says, describing how they brought the Korban Pesach on the times of Yoshiyahu, about 30 odd years before Korban Bayis Rishon, it says they cooked the Pesach in fire according to the law. Now we know the Korban Pesach has to be roasted. So if the Pasuk uses the word vayivashtu, then it means that roasting was included in the category of cooking.
So you can't put it into like a chicken pot to make it that way. It has to be
right. The Korban Pesach has to be roasted. You put it on a spit and you roast it over the fire that way. Yeah, but the point is though, the Pasuk is using the word vayivashlu for it. So we see that roasting can be included in the word vayivashlu. So therefore, Rabbi Yoshiya says, fine, it's not a solid proof, because as the Gemara is going to say, you go according to Lashon Ne'odim, but the fact is that the fact is we do see a possibility where the word bishul includes roasting. So the Gemara says, well, should we say then that they're arguing on the following basic point? Rabbi Yoshiya maybe says that when it comes to Nedarim, when you have to define something in Nedarim, you go according to the way the Torah uses the terminology. Whereas the Tana of On Mishnah would hold that you go according to the way people speak, and people don't use the word mevushal to refer to something that's roasted. So the answer is like, the answer is not necessarily, you don't have to say that. You could say everybody agrees by Nedarim, you go according to common regular speech. It's not really a machloikas, it's really just each one was talking the way that people talked in his area. Ba'as with the Tana Dilan, Litzli Kotor Litzli, Vilamavushal Kotor Lamavushal. In the area where the Tana of On Mishnah lived, they had two different terms they used for them. Sli was used exclusively of things that are roasted. Mavushal was used exclusively of things that are cooked in a pot with liquid or whatever. Ba'as with Rabbi Yeshua, Litzli Kotor Mavushal. Whereas in Rabbi Yeshua's area, even roasted food was called Mavushal. So therefore, according to him, then Loshim and Adam in that area would have to include Sli under Mavushal. Well, the Gemara asks about Kron Nosivla. What do you mean? What do you mean that Rabbi Yoshi is going according to Loshim Ne'adim? He's bringing a posik from Divayam. The answer is a smach to Ba'alma. He means that only as a support for what he's saying, but not that in fact you actually, go according to Loshim Torah. Rabbi Akiva Eger brings up a point over here that actually in the Chumash already you have when it describes the so the first time it talks about the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach in Parashas Boy, it says clearly that you roast it. But then later on, the Torah tells us in Parashas Re'eh, it reiterates the mitzvah of bringing the Korban Pesach, and it says, and it uses the expression, uvishalta v'achalta, that you should cook it and you should eat it, and then you go home. So why is Rabbi Yoshia not bringing from that pasuk? Why instead is he bringing from the pasuk in Divrei Yomim? So there's a number of answers on it. One answer is that in fact Divrei Yomim is closer to Loshen Bnei Adam than the Loshen of the pasuk in Parashas Re'eh. Divrei Yomim, first of all, was written almost 1,000 years after the Torah was given, so the language had changed over the time. But besides that, also Divrei Yomim is actually basically collected from different lists and different things that people had written at different times throughout the history of the kingdom of the kingdom of Yisrael and of Yehuda during the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, and afterwards at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, Ezra and Nehemiah collected those various writings together and created the Sefer Divrei Yomim as we have. So of course it's a sefer of Tanakh. It's written with Ruach HaKodesh like every other sefer. But in the origin of where it comes from is notes that people recorded, like official royal annals of what happened during their reign, different other things, family trees and things like that. So therefore, the Loshen there is more likely to reflect the way people actually talk. So therefore, that would be a reason why Rabbi Yoshia is bringing from that. That would be one reason to explain why Rabbi Yoshia is bringing from that pasuk rather than from Chumash. Anyway,
is the Chumash a better proof?
Like, that's the thing. Chumash would be a better proof if he was saying that we go according to Lashon Torah. But since he was saying that ultimately, and in fact, Tosfos mentions that point later in the next parak, we're also going to have an example where the Gemara brings a pasuk from Divrei Yomim as proof for something, and there we don't have anybody saying that you go according to Loshen Torah, and Tosfos makes the same point later on Daf Nun Hey that Divrei Yomim is closer to Loshen Bnei Adam. Anyway, that's one reason why the Gemara would be bringing that, why Rabbi Yoshi would be bringing that, rather than the pasuk from Chumash. In other words, the point is, the pasuk from Chumash, fine, you can see that Hashem uses the word boshel to refer it also to roasted, but how do you know that people, in their common speech, do that, then a better proof is Divrei Yomim. But the Chum says, so again, the thing we're saying, not really machlokas, in Rabbi Yoshi's area, that is in fact how people spoke, whereas in the area of the Tana of our Mishnah, they didn't. The Ran brings from the Yerushalmi, actually, that in fact the Yerushalmi sticks with the original understanding that Rabbi Yoshia would say that you go according to Lashon Torah l'chumra. In other words, the Yerushalmi would say that when you have a case like this, where Lashon Torah is more would result in something being more, in something else being included that otherwise wouldn't have been according to Lashon Adam, then you have to include it l'chumra. However, our Gemara is not saying that. Our Gemara is saying you always go according to Lashon Adam l'kula or l'chumra. Okay. Next, we said koinam tavshil fula. We said if a person says that I won't eat tavshil. So we said that he's allowed to eat. So we said he's allowed to eat maisek dera over. We said that if you have a thick porridge or a thick farina, thick hot cereal or whatever, he would be allowed to eat that. So that's the question. Rami tavshil nader. He made a neder not to eat tavshil. Isn't that included in tavshil? The answer is Amar Abaya, Haitana, Komidin, Misachal, Be Rifta, Tavshil Korinle. The definition in our Mishnah is anything that is eaten together with bread is called tavshil. Well then, thin porridge, which is watery, you eat bread with it because you can even dip the bread in it, but because at least it won't constitute a meal on its own. But thick porridge, you wouldn't. So therefore, it's not considered tavshil. But the Gemara and the Gemara says, "Vaha Tanya," and indeed we learn a brisa that bears that out. As we know, many times in Shas, you have the word "Vaha Tanya" is not a question, but rather a statement that here I can bring you a proof for this. A brisa says, "No dimin atavshil, also b'chomin atavshil." A person makes a neder not to eat tavshil, then he's also to eat any kind of tavshil. However, v'also b'tzoli or b'sholok v'mavoshil, he's also to eat food that is roasted or sholok. Or what we said before, shalot can either mean undercooked or overcooked, over mavoshol, or anything that's regular cooked. But also be hitrius rakos, he would also be also to eat soft. He would also be also to eat hitrios that are soft. Hitrios are a kind of pumpkin or gourd, and rakos. The Ran defines that rakos means small ones. Most of the other mafoshim say that means exactly what it sounds like. It means soft ones. Whatever the case, the point is, because sick people eat that together with their bread. So we see that the definition of tavshil is anything that is eaten together with bread. Okay, so now we understand, man. The word tavshil means anything that's eaten with bread. That is why the Mishnah distinguishes between thick porridge and thin porridge. So now the question becomes, any is that? Now let's talk about, though, we just said that sick people eat hitrios, which are a type of pumpkin, together with their bread. But the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? We have the example, Reb Yumia one time wasn't feeling well. Ola Gabea, who asked Yalasua, a doctor came to visit to cure him. This is back when doctors made house calls. Chaza, Kora, Demachis, Vivese. The doctor saw that there was a pumpkin lying over there in Reb Yumia's house. Shavke v'nofak. So he left Reb Yumia and went out of the house. He said, I can't be bothered. I'm a malach moise isle v'dein mevese. This guy has the malach amoves in his house. The pumpkins are not good for you. And you want me to go in and cure him? How am I going to be able to cure him if he has bad food like that in his house? He's obviously sick because he's not eating the right kind of food. That's what the Gemara is asking. Here we just said that sick people eat pumpkins, and here the doctor was saying that because Reb Yumia has pumpkins in his house, and he's obviously a goner. So the answer is like Kasha Hobarakichi Hobashuni. Depends whether we're talking about soft ones or hard ones. Rakichi means soft, ashuni means hard. So soft pumpkins are good for you, and sick people will eat them together with bread. Hard pumpkins, like this doctor saw in Reb Yumia's house, are not good for you.
Yeah, he had it hard, but it was there waiting to get soft.
No, the pastures, we would understand that there are different kinds of pumpkins, some of which always remain hard and others of which, yeah, I guess we would have to assume that. Rav Ba'ula Omar, Haba Kora Gufe, Rav Ba'ula says you don't even have to distinguish between different kinds of pumpkins, maybe because, like you said, different, even the hard ones eventually will soften. But Haba Kora Gufe, Haba Gave De Kora. There's a difference between the body of the pumpkin itself, the shell of it, versus the insides, which are softer. The insides you scoop out, those are good for you. And those sick people will eat, and it's good for them. On the other hand, what we're talking about over here is the outside of it. So here, Bapashtus, this doctor, saw that there were hard pieces of pumpkin that were ready to eat over there. We're not just talking they had it in the house. We're not just talking they had it in the house and they're going to use it as a container or something. Pastor, he understood that they're actually going to be using it for food, and therefore he's criticizing and saying, if you're not eating healthy, then how am I going to be able to cure you anyway? And we see, in fact, the Omer of Yehuda, as in fact we see that Rav Yehuda says in this connection, Luliva de Kora, the lulav of the pumpkin, where in other words, the same way as the lulav, not the shell, but just the opposite. The same way as a lulav on a palm tree comes from the center of the palm tree. The center branch is that grows every year is a lulav, and then you have the other branches eventually mature and they hang off to the sides. So luliva comes to mean the soft, newly grown part of something. So therefore, luliva de kara would mean the soft inside part of the pumpkin. Basilka, that is good to cook together with beets. The liver kitna, and also the soft inside part of the soft inside part of flax or flax seed, B'kutcha is good to mix with kutach and eat it. Kutach is a dip. We find in many places in Shas, it was made out of sour milk and breadcrumbs, which sometimes were moldy, and salt. It was basically, I guess, their equivalent. It was basically their equivalent, I guess, of sour cream or feta cheese or something like that. The way the Gemara describes it, it sounds fairly disgusting. And the Gemara mentions that Amoraim and Eretz Yisrael didn't like the idea of it either. But in Bavel, it was a very popular dip. So anyway, the point is, now we're saying that it's good to, sort of Yehuda is saying it's good to take it's good and healthy for you to take the inside of flax or flax seed and mix it with kutach and eat it. But he says, but davarze also lo omre b'fnei ama oretz. You're not allowed to say this last point to an ama oretz. Now, what's wrong with saying to an ama oretz? So the Mefarish says, because first he says, because it's a very good, effective cure, you don't want to tell them something that they're going to have hana from. But many of them, of course, say, what are you talking about? I mean, the Amei Oretz, they may be a little careless with mitzvahs, but to go out to get ad kedei kach, you're going to say you're going to deny them an effective medicine? No, that's not what it means. The Mefarish himself brings a second explanation, and the Ran also says that what it means is, like this, if the Amei Oretz, if they're told that the inside of flax seed is very good for you mixed with kutach, they're going to go and start picking all the flax in order to use the seeds to make this good medicinal food, and then there's not going to be enough flax for people to wear. So therefore, at least the Talmidei Chachamim, in other words, the point is, they know how to control themselves. So you tell them this, they'll have, you know, when there's flax seed available, fine, but they're not going to go and start pulling out the flax seed, the flax plants, in order to get at the seeds and the soft inner part. But the Amei Oretz might. Then there's other explanations. The Rosh says that the Amei Oretz are going to laugh at us. They're going to say, what are you writing this kind of thing in the Gemara? Even women know this kind of thing. What are the, you have to write it in the Gemara that's going to be for all time for Jewish people to learn. And Tosfos also says that you're putting jokes in the Gemara, like you're putting silly things in the Gemara. So therefore, that's another reason. The Rogachover has a very interesting explanation about it. He says when it comes to the dinim, what is it? When it comes to the dinim of Shemitah, I think it is, we find that flax. During Shemitah, you're allowed to buy flax even from an Amei Oretz, because you're like this. You're usually not allowed to buy vegetables or grains or whatever from an Amei Oretz during Shemitah, because he may have planted them during Shemitah. But flax, because it's not really worth very much, then people are not there. So the Yerushalmi in Masechta Shavuos explains that therefore you're allowed to buy flax from Amei Oretz during Shemitah. Chances are he didn't plant it during Shemitah; it's left over from previous years. Now if we tell the Amei Oretz that there's such medicinal value in flax, then they're going to go start planting it during Shemitah. Then you're going to have the problem. You can't buy it from them during Shemitah either. You're not going to have material for clothing. So therefore, better don't tell this to the Amei Oretz. Let them think the flax plant is only for making fiber, only for making linen, and not for eating, not for medicinal purposes. And that way they'll continue to not grow it during Shemitah. The Gemara continues. Rava Omar. Now Rava says, when we said before, so one answer is, again, we're discussing what's the deal with pumpkins. Are they good for a sick person or bad for him? On the one hand, we have this doctor with leukemia. On the other hand, we said that sick people eat hitrius together with their bread. So we distinguish between soft versus hard, or the inside versus the outside. So now Rava has a third explanation. Rava Omar, man cholin rabbanim. When the Braisa said that cholin, sick people, eat soft hitrius together, small hitrius together with bread, the cholin of that Braisa actually means rabbanon, actually means the Talmud Chachamim. So real sick people, any kind of pumpkins is bad for them. Therefore, the doctor went into Rabbi Yirmiyah's house, saw that there were pumpkins there, and walked right out. When we say that cholin eat pumpkins together with bread, we're talking about Talmud. We don't mean actually sick people, we mean Talmidei Chachamim, where they undermine their health by spending so much time and energy learning Torah, so they're not really sick, but they're called cholim for purposes of this braisa.
I think we also had it somewhere else that they call cholim because
Well, so now here's Rava L'Taimei. Rava is going according to his own Svara, the Amar Rava, because we find that Rava says, now you have in Masechta Rosh Hashanah, there's a discussion among the Tanurim over there. How often does Hashem judge a person? Does Hashem judge a person only once a year or once a day or all the time? So the Gemara says in particular, Rabbi Yossi says over there that Adam Nidin B'chol Yom, that a person is judged every day. So the Gemara says over there, and the Keman Matzlinen Al Ksiri V'Almiri, which opinion do we follow nowadays when we daven throughout the year for people who are Ksiri and Miri are both words for people who are sick? So every day we say the Bracha Rafa'enu. Every day we say Tilim and we do whatever for people who are sick. So now, according to the opinion, according to the Rabbanon who say over there that a person is judged only on Rosh Hashanah, then that's it. It's been decided on Rosh Hashanah. There'd be no sense in davening for them throughout the rest of the year. There can be a distinction whether it's a person that the rabbin need him, et cetera, but fine. And in the regular case, you have stam a person that that's sick in a person's household. So according to some of the opinions over there, it would seem there'd be no particular reason to daven for them throughout the rest of the year, only on Rosh Hashanah. Yet we do. So who do we follow when we daven for such people throughout the year? Command to Rabbi Yossi. Specifically, that would be according to Rabbi Yossi, that Adam Nidin B'chol Yom. So now, what's these two words, Ksiri and Miri? Midika Amma Ksiri Umiri, since we're using the two words, Ksiri and Miri, both of which mean sick people. Shmamino Ksiri, Ksiri Mamash. So we understand, Ksiri means people who are actually sick. Ksiri literally means short. It means, in other words, that they're impatient. The Ran says, Nafshim Ksora Machmas Cholyam. Their nefesh is short, meaning, in other words, their patience is short because they're sick. So that would be Ksiri, and Miri, which means people who are not feeling well, would be Rabbanim, would be the Chachamim, where again, they're not actually sick, but they're weakened because they put so much effort into their learning Torah. So therefore we see that Rava considers Tamar Chachamim to be a kind of Cholim. So he can say, therefore, that in the Brice before, when we talked about Cholim, eating pumpkins, then we don't mean actual sick people, we mean Chachamim. So they would, but actual sick people, according to Rava, should not be eating any part of the pumpkin, not the inside, not the outside, not soft ones, not hard ones.
Okay. Is there somewhere where it says that Tamid and Chum are considered healthy?
No, I mean, okay, we have the expression in other places that Torah Mateshes Koicha Shel Adam. We have the expression that Torah weakens a person's strength. You have, for example, in the famous story of Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yechanan, that Rabbi Yechanan tells him you should be using your strength for learning Torah, and then he doesn't have the ability to jump across the river the way he did before. Because once he had already accepted on himself that he's going to learn Torah, that already made his Yetzirah and his body a little weaker. Rish Lakish was still very strong and powerful after that as well, but still, in other words, there's the idea that Torah. There's the idea that there's a line in the Zohar that says something like when the body is weak, the neshama is strong, and vice versa. So therefore, Talmid Chacham, who's strengthening his neshama by learning Torah, then you often find it goes along with that his body becomes weaker. We said in the Mishnah, Mutar Ba'alba. Now we said if a person made a neder not to eat tavshil, so now we've explained that tavshil means something that is eaten together with bread. So therefore we said he would be allowed to eat thick tavshil, a thick porridge, because that kind of thing is not eaten together with bread. However, the Gemara says, Masnissin deloike bavloi. Our Mishnah then is not going the way that people in Bavel do it. Because in Bavel they would do that. The Amar Abzera, Bavloi Tipshoi. Reb Zera says that you have the foolish people from Bavel are foolish. Reb Zera himself was from Bavel, and he moved to Eretz Yisrael. So now if he's putting down the people where he came from, the achli lachma belachma, they eat bread together with bread. In other words, what do? They take their bread and they eat it together with thick porridge, which basically also tastes like bread. So therefore, the whole point is you want to eat bread, but something that tastes different than it. So they were just taking their bread and dipping it into this thick porridge and eating it together. So in Bavel, you might well say that even thick maisik data, if a person were to say that he's also in tavshil, then he would be also eat thick maisik data. But in other places where they wouldn't do that, then he would be mutter. The other place the Gemara brings this is in Beitza, in connection with the dinim of Eruv Tavshilin. Is this kind of porridge? In fact, can you make an Eruv Tavshilin on bread as well as this porridge, or are they considered basically the same food? Yeah. Okay. Omer of Chista. Since we're mentioning this daisa, since we're mentioning this this matter of that in Bavel they would eat bread together with this daisa, together with this porridge, so now the Gemara digresses to talk about what's the proper way to do it. If you're going to be eating them together, as they do in Bavel, what's the proper way to do it? So, Omer of Chista, Dimash Elohim Laholim Nakdoni de Hutzel. Is there anybody available who can ask the Nakdonim of Hutzel? Hutzel is the name of a city in Bavel. Nakdonim, actually, the Ran brings two girsos. One is that the word is Nakroni with a resh, and therefore it means people who eat in a very clean and in a very clean and fastidious way. The other explanation, it means Nakdonim, means who are very particular, very finicky about the way they eat. Anyway, so they'll know they don't just stam eat. They're very careful about their food. So maybe there's somebody available to ask them. Hoden daisa, when it comes to this daisa, where we're saying that you have cooked wheat and you're eating it like a porridge or something. Heichin mali. What is the best way to eat it? Dechiti balachma dechiti or decidi balachma decidi is the best thing if you have porridge made out of wheat to eat it together with wheat bread. And if you have porridge made out of barley to eat it together with barley bread, is that the ideal way to eat it? Maybe the better thing is when you're having wheat porridge, eat it together with barley bread. And you're eating barley porridge, eat it together with wheat bread. At least that way you have different flavors. Like this Reb Zera is criticizing and saying, what's the point of eating bread together with daisa if you just have the same flavor over? So Reb Chista is saying, so Taka, is it better to reinforce the flavor, or is it better to have two somewhat different flavors, wheat and barley, after all, tastes different? So the Gemara says, Rava achle b'chassisi. Rava, when he would eat daisa, when he would eat bread, he would eat it together with chassisi. So chassisi, the Ran says, means we talked about before, that sometimes they would take wheat and toast it in the oven to use it as a snack, but then they could become sweet by that, by toasting it. Then also, what sometimes they would do is they would grind it up to make flour, and they would use that also not only they could eat the roasted grains by themselves as a snack, they could also grind them up to make a sweet flour, which then they would use some. They would mix it sometimes with liquids to make a sweet drink, or they would use it for different other things. So here, Rava would prepare daisa from that kind of flour, from flour of toasted grain, and then he would dip his bread in that. So that way, at least again, you have like a different kind of flavor. So regular wheat flavor together with the flavor of roasted wheat, which is sweeter.
The sweet part comes from the shell.
The sweet part of hashdus comes from the fact that the wheat grain has starch in it, which converts to sugar, and that when you roast it in the oven, it becomes caramelized. So then you have a caramelized sugar that develops in there. Yeah.
And normally, when they process it the regular way, then
the regular way, you're only grinding it, and only then do you bake it. So then that's different. You mix it together with water or whatever. Here we're talking about you toast them by themselves. Tosfos gives a different explanation that chassisi means daisa made out of lentil flour. So then the idea is again that he'd be eating his bread dipped in daisa, dipped in this porridge, but not made out of wheat. And that way he avoids Rav Chista's question of whether it's better with wheat or barley. He would be eating it together with daisa made out of lentils. It would also be pashtos, then it's less of a problem with what Rav Zera is criticizing, because then also you have different flavors. Okay. Since we're talking more about eating daisa, so the Gemara says, Rav Bar Rav Huna, Ashkechel Rav Huna, Dekaochel daisa be'etzba'ose. One time, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna found Rav Huna, his father, was eating daisa with his fingers. Now, they didn't have forks. They generally didn't use forks in those days. They would pick up daisa with their fingers and eat it. Preposterous, we have to understand that it would be thick, the thick kind, which you can easily pick up with your hands. So he's asking, why are you eating it with your hands? Why aren't you using a spoon? Spoons they had, yeah. Amalei, so Rav Huna tells him, Hachi Amar Rab, because you should know that Rab, who was Rav Huna's Rebbe, said, Daisa betz ba'asa basim, when you eat daisa with your fingers, it tastes good. B'chol deken betautin, all the more so if you pick it up with two fingers. B'chol deken betlas, and all the more so if you pick it up with three fingers. So yeah, it's actually better. Rav is telling us that it's actually better to eat daisa, to eat this kind of porridge with your hands, than it would be with a spoon. Who knows? Maybe you get a little of the flavor. Maybe it adds a little extra flavor to it. Whatever it is, Rav is telling us it's a good idea to do. That's we're gonna have that soon in the Gemara. The Marsha points out that Rav about Rav Huna's question might have been why, like you said, why aren't you using a spoon? It also might have been instead why you're using your whole hand instead of just dipping one or two fingers into it. And therefore, he's answering him that it's better to eat it with your fingers. And the reason I'm using my whole hand is because the we're saying that it tastes better when you're using your whole hand rather than not. Now, the Maharsha also points out, you mentioned as far as dirty fingers, the Gemara is going to mention soon about a couple of Tanoim who were eating together, and one of them was criticizing the other for sticking his dirty fingers in the bowl. The difference is there you had two people eating out of the same bowl. Here, Rav Huna is eating by himself, so it's not going to matter whether his fingers are, okay. In this connection, Rav says to his son Chia, this is the regular Rav Chia in Chas. Rav Chia, the regular Rav Chia in Chas is Rav's uncle. This is Rav himself had a son named Chia. Anyway, he tells him, similarly, Rav Huna told his son Rabbah, if they invite you to eat daisa, to eat this kind of porridge, add parsa up to a parsa. L'meichel bistro de Torah, if they're inviting you to eat beef, add plus a steak, beef, whatever, add plus a parasin up to three parasa. So what does that mean? The Ran explains it's worth it traveling even one parasa to eat daisa. It's worth traveling even three parasa, which is about 8 miles or so, in order to be able to eat meat, in order to be able to eat a good steak. The Mefarish mentions that explanation, but then he says also a different explanation. That is his first explanation is that if you eat daisa, you should know it really only sustains you afterwards. If you're walking, it really only sustains you for a parasa. After that, you're going to be hungry again. As opposed to if you eat beef, then it'll sustain you for three parasa. So according to that, then he's telling him about the nutritional benefits of one versus the other, according to the other explanation, and that's the Ran's only explanation. We're talking about how worthwhile is it to go out of your way in order to be able to eat one of these things.
Chicken meat fills you up.
Similarly, Amalei Rav L'chia Brei, also Rav tells his son Chia, V'chein Amalei Rav Huna L'Rav Brei, and Rav Huna told his son Rabbah, "Kol midam lo siflet kamei Rabbah." When you're in front of your Rebbe, there's nothing that if you eat it, you should afterwards spit it out. It's not the kavod to spit in front of your Rebbe. Levar min kora v'daisa, with the exception of kora, which is pumpkins that we're talking about before, and daisa was porridge that we've been talking about. If you ate it and afterwards you have saliva in your mouth, shein dermin lepsilta shall aver. The saliva that forms in your mouth after you eat those is as dangerous for you as a hot wick of lead. You have, for example, when you have the missa of Srefa, when based in one of the four missas based in is Srefa, and that's what they would do. They would melt a wick made out of lead and pour it down the guy's throat. So now Rav and Rav Huna are telling their respective sons that that the saliva that forms in your mouth after eating pumpkins or after eating daisa is very dangerous for you. So with other kinds of foods, just swallow down that saliva. But with this, don't. Even if you're in front of your Rebbe, spit it out. And in fact, even if you're standing in front of King Shabu, the king of Persia, who ruled over Bavel at that time as well, also spit it out because it's dangerous, to swallow. One point is, in other words, so it's like if you spit in front of the king, you might be in danger, but he might take offense and execute the person. But on the other hand, if you swallow it, then for sure you're going to be in danger. So therefore, the vadai overrides the suffix.
You ate it, it's in your system, but
but the saliva that forms from it is no good for you. Yeah, I don't know. Okay. getting back to eating daisa, so the Gemara tells Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanoim, one time were eating together out of the same bowl. One was eating it with his fingers, picking it up out of the bowl with his fingers and eating it. The other one was using a hutza. A hutza, the Ran defines, means klipas eitz, means a piece of bark. So they didn't have a spoon available, but so he took like a piece of bark and used it as like a makeshift spoon. Hutza in the Gemara often means like lulav leaves, so it can mean something like that, like whatever it is. It was using something like that as like a makeshift spoon. The one who was eating with his hutza says to the other one, how long are you going to be giving me your dirt to eat? Because there's dirt under your fingernails. Every time you put your finger in the bowl, some of it is getting on the food, and therefore the result is I'm ending up eating from the dirt under your fingernails. How can you do that? On the other hand, though, the one eating with his fingers said to the one eating with the hutza, he says, how long are you going to be feeding me your saliva? When you take the hutza, you take some food on it, then you put it in your mouth, inevitably some saliva from your mouth gets on it. You don't clean it between bites. It's one thing if he was using a spoon, it would be easy enough to clean off between one bite and the next, to wipe it off, but a hutza, you can't really do that. The hutza will fall apart. So he's saying, so every time you're putting it back in the bowl, then you're putting in a little of your saliva as well. So what the point is, in other words, that neither one, the point is, the Gemara seems to be saying, if you're eating with somebody else, then have a little der cheretz for them and don't eat using either of those ways. Get a spoon or pour it into separate bowls or whatever. Here, Bapashtas, I guess, they were poor. They didn't have a choice. Ben Yoyada actually points out, now the Gemara says that one of them was eating this way and one of them was eating that way, and then the Gemara has to go into a long arichus. The one who was eating with the hutza says to the other one. The one who was eating with his fingers says to the other one. Why not just say simply, Rabbi Yossi was eating with his fingers, Rabbi Yehuda was eating with the hutza, or the other way around, and Rabbi Yossi says to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Yossi. Why the long lashon? He said, because the Chacham didn't explicitly want to say a gnai, something embarrassing, something improper about either one of the Chachamim. So we're saying there were the two of them. We're left to figure for ourselves which one might have been which one. But like this, we don't actually have explicitly saying that Rabbi Yossi would say to Rabbi Yehuda, you're giving me your filth, and Rabbi Yehuda saying to Rabbi Yossi, you're giving me your saliva, or vice versa, out of derech eretz for the Chacham. Another thing, since we're talking about Chachamim eating together, so the Gemara tells another story in this connection. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, Aisul Kamai Blusvim. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, one time, were sitting together, and they brought them blusvian, which is a kind of figs, which they were kind of figs that are very difficult to digest. The Ran just says they're very difficult to digest. The Mefarish says that they're overcooked or overripe, whatever it is. Anyway, Rabbi Yehuda ochel, Rabbi Shimon lai ochel. Rabbi Yehuda ate from them, Rabbi Shimon did not. Omele Rabbi Yehuda, my time lai ochel mar. So Rabbi Yehuda asked Rabbi Shimon, why aren't you eating from these? Omele Rabbi Shimon, elo en yotzim, mei me'ayim kol ikir. Rabbi Shimon tells him, because these never leave the stomach. They're very hard to digest. They're like, they just sit in your stomach. So they're not good to eat. So Rabbi Yehuda says, you know what, in that case, it's even better. We'll be able to rely on them tomorrow. Rabbi Yehuda, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, was very poor. He couldn't really afford a lot of food. So like this, if we have food that stays in the stomach a long time and helps you still feel full for a longer period, and you can extract more nutrients from it, then good. Adarabe, it's good to eat it. In this connection, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda have a Yosef Tamed Rab Tarfin. Rabbi Yehuda was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rab Tarfin. Omele Rab Tarfin hayoyim panecha tzehuvim. So Rab Tarfin says to Rabbi Yehuda, today your face looks very glowing. You look like something really good happened to you today. So what happened? Omele, so Rabbi Yehuda tells him, emesh yotzu avadecha l'sada. Yesterday your servants, Rab Tarfin was very rich. So Rab Tarfin had a lot of servants. So yesterday your servants went out to the field. Yotzu avadecha l'sada. They went out to the field. They revealed on a trudin. They brought us trudin, which are beets or some related species like that. V'achalnum b'loy melach, and we ate them without salt. And they're very nutritious, even without the salt. They were very good. The imachalnum b'melach. So that's why my face is glowing now from that good food that I had to eat. If we had eaten them with salt, our faces would be glowing even more, because then it would have been even tastier and even better for us. Because then it would taste better. In all these things, I mean, you know, you have the meaning of it, and then you have the ruchniistic meaning of it as well. Ben Yehoyada talks about over here some Kabbalistic ideas of what beats represent. They represent din. The word trodin breaks down into tough resh din. The tough resh is the number 600, and din, and that eating them with salt breaks the power of din, the power of vura, and therefore it's better for you. But even by themselves, they're good, and he has a whole lot of riches about it. In this connection, Rabbi Yehuda, now this time we're saying he was sitting in front of Reb Tarfon and his face was glowing. But even other times, Rabbi Yehuda had a very ruddy face, like his face always looked red and healthy. So Omra Hahima Tunisa Rabbi Yehuda. So one time a goyish lady says to Rabbi Yehuda, Moda Ravi, how is it possible? You're teaching Torah and you're drunk. The way his face looked, he looked like he had had a lot to drink. So how is such a thing possible? Omallah, so he answers, the trust in the hands of this woman, in other words, like he's saying, I swear to you by the trust that I have in Hashem or something like that. The only wine that I ever drink is for Kiddush and for Avdallah, and then the Dalad process on Pesach night. And you should know that the wine there on Pesach has such an effect on me. I then have to bind up my temples, the sides of my head. I have to bind something around my head because of the headaches I get from Pesach until Shavuos. So he was so unused to drinking wine, he drank four kosis, one after the other, on Pesach night, and the result is he'd be having headaches till Shavuos. Which, by the way, there's a halacha that comes out of that. Even a person who doesn't like wine, or it gives him headaches or whatever, is still required to drink the Dalad kosis on Pesach. So now the poskim do talk about it. If a person is going to get actually sick from it, then maybe not, then he can use chamam dinner or something. They talk about in this connection, why don't Rabbi Yehuda use grape juice? So Yeshua, I mean, that shows that you can't use grape juice for the Dalad kosis. You have to use wine. On the other hand, people point out, practically speaking, nowadays we can get grape juice all year round. Back then, you couldn't. The grape harvest would be Elul Tishrei time. If you just made grape juice and didn't ferment it by Pesach time, it would be spoiled. The only way to preserve it was to make it into wine. So the fact that Rabbi Yehuda is not having wine, is not having grape juice for Pesach, doesn't necessarily prove that he wouldn't have used it if it was available. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying to this lady, you think that I'm drunk. Actually, I barely drink wine at all. And when I do, then it gives me headaches. Ella, he says, Chochmas Adam, Toriponav, the Chochma, the wisdom of a person, as the Pasuk says in Kehelas, makes his face light up. So that's why I look so red and glowing and healthy, is because of the Chochma of Torah that I've learned. In this connection, also, Omalayahu Tzduki the Rabbi Yehuda, a Tzduki or a Min, very often in the Gemara, in such context, the word is supposed to be a Min, and the censors change it to Tzduki. In Rabbi Yehuda's times, you really didn't have Tzduki anymore. They existed mostly in the times of the second Beis Hamikdash, and Rabbi Yehuda is a few decades later. Anyway, so a Tzduki or a Min or whatever says to Rabbi Yehuda, but also the fact that his face looks like he's so healthy, Ponecha Doimin Oikimalvibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibibib Both of those, you can make a lot of profit in a short amount of time. You lend at ribis, like you're laying there in bed and you're sleeping and your money is getting bigger and bigger from the ribis that's accumulating. And as far as chazirim, they'll eat anything. So therefore, you know, you don't really have to feed them a particular diet. They can scavenge for their food and then you earn a lot of profit from it. So you look like that kind of person. You look like you're very, very satisfied with yourself, like you're making a very comfortable parnasa in one of those ways. Both of them also. Oh, it is? Oh, Ribis is currently the one pair of grandma. Interesting. Okay. Omale, so Rabbi Yehuda tells him, no, you should know for Jews, both of those things are awesome. Ella, the reason why I look so healthy, between my house and the Beis Medrash, where I go to learn Torah, there are 24 bathrooms. Each different times during the day, I go into each one of them in order to go to the bathroom very regularly, and that's what makes me so healthy. a different girsa. It says on the side over here, which actually you have this Gemara also in Brachas, and Rabbi Yehuda used the expression over there, Badikna nafshoy bikulu, as I'm going to the Beis Medrash, I stop by each one to check do I need to go to the bathroom. So therefore, that keeps me very healthy, that I eliminate waste from my body as soon as possible. Things work, well, to a certain extent, things work different. We do often say Nishtanu Artivim, but there is an idea. I mean, even nowadays, they'll tell you that's good to eliminate waste as soon as possible. Yeah. In this connection, Rabbi Yehuda kad ozel bei medrasha, when Rabbi Yehuda would be walking to the Beis Medrash, shoku gulfal kasve, he would take along with him an earthenware jug and carry it on his shoulder. The point is, this way, when he comes to the Beis Medrash, he can sit on it. They didn't necessarily have enough chairs or benches or whatever in the Beis Medrash, so he'd take this along in order to have something to sit on. Omer, and he would say, G'doyla malacha shemechabedas es ba'alech. Work is a great thing. It brings honor to the one who does it. In other words, I'm doing work over here. I'm carrying this thing through the streets, but it helps that now I have a place to sit in the Beis Medrash rather than having to sit on the floor. Similarly, Reb Shimon shakel tzana al kasve. Similarly, Reb Shimon would carry a basket on his shoulder. Same thing. And he would say the same thing, that the basket, now he has what to sit on, and therefore it'll be more bekavedik for him in the Beis Medrash. So we see, in other words, that even though the Gemara says elsewhere that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't necessarily be doing a malacha in public in order that people don't think less of him, but here he's doing it that it helps bring him more covered, and therefore that kind of thing would be allowed. We'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with another story involving Rabbi Yehuda, where we see from it how poor he was, and we'll go on to other stories and a whole piece of Agadah involving the personal lives of the Chacham. Everyone.